happens every time I talk with Eric Meehan. Those chills multiply. And it's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Hello, Eric.
Hi, everybody. Rich and I were just talking about hot dogs, which are best accompanied as a true beverage professional by water. Copious amounts of water.
No, thank you.
It's a strange phenomenon, isn't it? You know, I remember first hearing about it when I was a kid, and full disclosure, everybody's going to be surprised by this. I've always been a bit of a food snob. Now, these days, I will happily, not to Joey Chestnut level, but I will happily eat, you know, copious amounts of hot dogs with everything on it, and I've gotten over my particular. But, you know, it was one of those how the sausage gets made sort of things when I was a kid, like, don't eat the hot dogs.
Right.
And then you're like, yeah, okay, well, there's this thing. And I'm like, oh, wow, people must eat, like, you know, 12 hot dogs at a clip. And then you find out, and then you see it, and you, ugh. Actually, I watched a documentary on his main competitor. Was it Kobayashi, I believe?
Right, right.
I think the only thing more, because, well, let's be honest, we're Americans. Americans have some questionable dietary habits, just in general. It is that which we fight against every day. So it didn't really surprise me that there was some dude, what is it, from Indiana, I think, that is, whatever, I forget where he's from. That some dude from America that, you know, would do something truly disgusting with lips and hooves. But then you find out that, like, oh no, whatever you can do, the Japanese can do way more intensely in a fashion. And the person who's going to do it probably weighs as much as my daughter, Nella.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
It blows my mind. And now it's a thing. Like, any, you know, as a parent, you're always like, well, you know, up until recently, we've been sort of defeated recently. Like, well, kid, you're never going to earn a paycheck playing video games. And you say the same, like, well, kid, you're never going to, you know, earn a paycheck, you know, stuffing your face with hot dogs and wings and cornbread and lobsters and whatever else.
All because of a guy from Bangor, George Shea, who went to Bangor High School, is the boss, the owner of this competitive eating league.
Oh, my God. See? Yeah. Now I've learned something. Well, gosh, you know, after witnessing the fireworks and the orchestra and all the gloriousness, I didn't think Bangor could be any more glorious. But there you go.
There you go, right there.
Jeez. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, folks, we closed out last week. I was sort of spouting out very quickly in the minute that I had left about what we'd be talking about this week, but the sort of the origins of wine in general, I suppose. It's a great truth that the places where wine really came from are not accessible by most of us in the West. The reasons are varied, I'm sure somewhat obvious in certain cases, but basically the places that wine came from are Eastern Europe and that sort of land bridge between the Middle East and Eastern Europe. So as I mentioned, and I'll just sort of repeat myself from last week, the earliest known traces of wine, this is not winemaking, this is consumption of wine, the earliest is in Georgia, right? And that was circa 6,000 BC. Iran, 5,000 BC. Sicily, 4,000 BC. Wine, and we're talking today about Greece, which is sort of the southern extension of the Balkans. It reached the Balkans in about 4,500 BC and was consumed throughout that area, Greece, Thrace, Rome, Macedonia, etc., in that time period. So we have evidence of consumption. The earliest known winery, right, place where we actually found, like, oh, people were here, they were living around here and cultivating and making wine, dates from 4,100 BC. It is known as the Areni, that is A-R-E-N-I, the Areni number one winery. In Armenia, and it's a cave. And And essentially, you know, obviously for those out there who know a little bit about wine, really nothing has changed. Why are you in a cave? Well, because you have natural temperature control. It's cold. There's no UV damage. It's just temperature stable and quiet and cool. And that is exactly what you need for nice, slow fermentation of wine. And as I said, very little has changed. We've just sort of slowly perfected and mechanized some of it. But there are absolutely places right now that you can go to that is they're doing exactly the same things as you would have seen in this place. The area that you might find some stuff from is Georgia and some other places like that. Georgia has really sort of enjoyed a renaissance because it has still been accessible. And in fact, I mean, even my cousin in the army was stationed in Georgia not too long ago and has a Georgian wife. Georgia has been accessible to the West, and therefore a lot of Western winemakers have gone there. Why? They're the ones who really can show folks this ancient style. Originally, it was just sort of these clay dugouts, but they gradually, obviously, graduated to amphoras and other clay vessels that were not so much transportable, but removable. It's not that you're necessarily transporting them about in these clay vessels because they were very, you know, you could break and all these things. But what you did is you buried these amphora, these clay vessels, in the earth. Again, why? Because of temperature stabilization. It's free refrigeration, essentially, you know. And so Georgia has really enjoyed that. And then, of course, the roots of all that have sort of they coalesced into the Greek winemaking scene, and it is that I sort of want to talk about really quick. Greece is the sort of the connection between the old world and the new world that has been sort of spotty, and that's the fault of importers. The importation of Greek wine has been very, very spotty. And we can sort of delve into that if we have time. But basically, it was the Greeks, because of their conquest of these places, certainly Alexander the Great, when he sort of coalesced and conquered much of really the known world at that time and sort of made Greek, I mean, just to step back from winemaking, of course, Greece is the cradle of Western civilization. I mean, we're talking philosophy, we're talking government, we're talking all sorts of new ideas and ways of life, and they spread that. So that is how we got winemaking, really, in the rest of the world, because essentially they brought it to Italy, and Rome brought it to everybody else. But it was absolutely in Greece that, you know, they sort of really coalesced everything. It's where you find the first evidence of, for instance, crushed grapes, not just grapes left to sort of crush themselves on their own, which is, again, still practiced today, folks. That's the thing where you have sort of the free-run juice. But this is the first place in Greece where you started to see people pressing and getting that juice out. They introduced Vitis vinifera. So they were the ones who sort of identified, ooh, these are the grapes. This is the strain of grapes genetically that we think is tasty when you ferment it. And it is from that we have Cabernet, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir. I mean, it's the Vitis vinifera was the sort of linchpin there. And of course, we've been talking a lot about the grape Zinfandel or Primitivo, right? That's popped up a lot in recent weeks. That itself is from Croatia, originally, genetically. So it got sort of brought south and then distributed through the rest of the wine world. Rich, how am I doing on time, sir?
You've got about a minute and a half.
Okay. So, obviously, Greece is hard. Why is Greece hard? Well, it's not one landmass, right? It's 1,600 islands, a giant peninsula, and then a very mountainous northern region. It's tricky, and of course it's tricky politically and things like that. So one of the big hurdles for we here, you know, trying to just get Greek wines to the rest of the world, is that importers will sort of pop up and pop back into the ether. But that said, the ones that you obviously are going to be familiar with, looking for wines that bear the name of the island of Santorini, which is made out of the grape Assyrtiko, wonderful white wine, beautiful acidity. Of course, the region of Nemea in the Peloponnese, making wonderful red wines that certainly stand up to the best, you know, medium-bodied, slightly tannic wines that people like from central Italy and France, etc. And other tremendous white wines. And of course, you have Retsina, the resiny preserved wine that is ish. Anyway, so we'll talk a little bit more about it maybe next week before we talk a little bit more about Italy, etc. But Greece, fantastic, fantastic place. And I highly recommend you get over there and drink the wines there because tough to get here. I'll talk to you next week.
That sounds great. Eric, thanks. As always, have a good week. We'll visit with you next Tuesday.
Excellent. Thanks, Rich. Bye-bye.
That's Eric Mahan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company with this week's edition of Message in the Bottle on Downtown.